This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today I have with me
Mike Carter.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, now Mike, you came to New Zealand from South Africa in 1971.
That's right. I remember it well because Palmerston North had just been having its centenary celebration and they were just beginning to wind
down. Oh, that's right. Yes. So what was your motivation for coming here?
Well, basically, we wanted to go somewhere other than South Africa. Yeah. Me being my wife and I. And a couple of years previous to that, I was on long leave from the university where I was working, and I went on a trip around the world because I wanted to see the Panama Canal. Hmm. And the only way to see the Panama Canal was to get on a ship and sail around the world.
Yeah.
And in the course of that, I spent a few days in Wellington. And it was beautiful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Perfect weather.
Oh, you mean on the... And you realised afterwards that
typical. It wasn't always like that. Yes. That's right. But I just fell in love with the country. Yeah. And when a couple of years later, my wife and I and my sister and her husband, we were fed up with South Africa. And the government...
You'd grown up there?
Oh, yes.
And about how old were you?
I was 30.
Yeah, okay.
And the government had just been doing something particularly crass, and so we said, you know, we can't stay here and do nothing.
Yeah.
So we either have to be active, which I'm not that kind of person, or we need to go somewhere else.
So you were sort of the English South African, would it be?
Father couldn't speak a word of Afrikaans. But although he was born in South Africa. I was basically an English South African. English. English bred South African.
And apartheid was in existence then?
It came in when I was about seven. Yeah. The national government took power in 1947.
Oh, yeah.
And, so I'd basically lived with apartheid most of my life at that point.
Yeah, and you're basically feeling you didn't like that environment, or...
Yes.
Or was it other aspects, opportunities?
That's right. I didn't approve of apartheid, and... The university that I was working at still admitted all races. In fact, in my first year as a student, the government passed a law which had the beautiful title of the Extension of Universities Education Act, which banned people of colour from attending white universities. You know, so WITS had to work towards excluding all its non-white students.
Were there non-white staff as well?
Probably, but very few.
Okay.
And so I was always opposed to apartheid.
Yeah.
But with all that, I was a law-abiding citizen, you know. So you have this problem if you're a law-abiding, respectable citizen. Do you break the law and get thrown into jail or whatnot, or do you move somewhere else? As I say, I fell in love with New Zealand, so everyone else was saying, where should we go? I said, let's go to New Zealand, you know, it's a great country, and we did.
Well, was there a big move then? Because I know later on there were quite a lot of South Africans.
I was quite a rarity at that stage. It was later on when the government was changing in South Africa, a lot of people were leaving, but at the time when I came here, I was a bit of an oddity. I had to go and give talks to people about South Africa. And, so it was a bit of a rarity.
So, because that was even before the Springbok tour issues. Before all that.
It was.
So how were you sort of received in New Zealand as a South African then, given...
Oh, I never had any problems on that score. And New Zealand, although of course there were differences, because it was also part of the old British Empire, there were lots of things that were familiar. The main thing that was unfamiliar was the fact that well, that it wasn't apartheid, that the races could mix freely.
Yeah, I suppose the different proportions, though, weren't they?
Oh, yes. In South Africa, the black people were a big majority.
Yes.
Yeah. And the other thing, the thing that was most noticeable for me in Palmerston North when I first arrived is that there were no burglar bars on the window.
Ah, yeah. So there's much less crime here.
Yeah.
And what about standard of living? Was it similar to South Africa?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah. Way of life very similar.
I didn't notice anything particularly different, except, of course, that I lived in a big city in South Africa.
Yeah, okay.
The difference, those were the only differences, that I was in a relatively small city. The way of life was much the same.
Yeah. So then, and you came from a university job into another university job, and you found the students very similar as well, or and the sports interest very similar?
The students didn't work so hard. And I tried to work out why, and I eventually figured out why, because there's a big Jewish population in Johannesburg, and Jewish people, when they study hard and they work hard and they need to get on, it's part of their culture.
Yeah.
So at the university I worked at, there was a high proportion of Jewish students, and they worked really hard.
Yeah.
So if the Gentiles wanted to get anywhere, they had to work hard too.
Mm-hmm.
When I came here, I remember my first week of lecturing, I had a tutorial for a class of about 40. I said, there'll be an hour's tutorial this afternoon. And I think two people turned up, and I thought, what? Because I'd be worked off my feet in South Africa.
Yeah, yeah.
So I noticed the difference, that the students were much more laid back.
Yeah,
Otherwise, it was much the same.
Yeah, yeah. I saw something similar, actually. Coming from Britain, there was the idea you're paid to do a job, you should be working hard for that time. Yeah. And one day I just woke up and thought, oh, I don't care anymore, and I suddenly felt right at home. Yeah, it was a far more relaxed view. It's probably under a bit more pressure now, I'm not sure.
I think it is.
It's changed. Yeah. So in terms of fitting in then, you had the same sort of social activities here?
Yes, there were some differences. I mean, there were no servants for a start.
Mm-hmm.
And coming from a South African background as a white person, virtually every white household had a maid servant who was full-time and a gardener who was part-time.
Yeah.
And when I came here, I found myself having to clean the house and work in the garden. And I didn't mind at all, but it was certainly different. Nobody was going to do it for you.
So you and your wife shared that, or she was working too, was she?
She just had a baby.
Yep.
In fact, our baby was born in South Africa, our first baby, and came out to South Africa at the age of a couple of months. So she was occupied with that. But certainly
that would have been tricky. You had some other family here at the same time, or you just moved away from all your family?
My sister and her husband came out at the same time.
Yeah.
But other than that, no, they were.
And were they also in Palmerston North?
Or? No, he had a job in Wellington.
Okay.
And so he went down there.
Yeah.
And my parents came out the following year. Once they decided that we were going to stay, because at first they were thinking, you'll be back in 6 months. Once they decided we were going to stay, then they moved over here, because in the case of my parents, both their children had moved to New Zealand. So it was really not a question. Norma's parents were different, because she had a brother who stayed in South Africa, so did they. Yeah.
So, you and your parents were able to bring all your assets out?
we were, at that stage, we had virtually no assets.
Yeah.
That is my wife and I. So
there were
very strict rules in South Africa at that stage, which prevented you from taking lots of money out of the country.
Yes.
But we didn't have any money. So.
Yes. But your parents would have been hindered.
They
were
not wealthy either. My father had a very good pension, but little in the way.
And that could be transferred as well.
Transferable.
Okay. Oh, that's good.
So we never had any problem with that school. We packed all our worldly possessions into one big packing case and moved to New Zealand.
And you could sort of sell a house there and buy an equivalent house here, or?
We'd never bought a house because we'd only been married a year or so. We rented a flat in Hillbrow. So, no, we had very little in the way of actual possessions to get rid of.
Yeah. Okay. And when you got here, it was before the Raglan and Bastion Point and so on. So were you aware of the racial issues here?
Oh, yes, we were. It was... Yeah, we were well aware of that there were problems. But compared to South Africa, the problems were small ones.
So what were... I came in 78, and I saw... Soon after I arrived, I said, I think, in prize-winning history essays, including one that stood out, was saying, we don't have race problems in New Zealand because we treated the Maori so well, which you wouldn't hear said today, I don't think. But in 71, was there much awareness then of...
Well, it was so different in that respect, because in South Africa... We'd had apartheid for more than 20 years, and apartheid was basically the fundamental axiom was that the races were separate, that black people or coloured people, South Africa is a difference between black and coloured, they were allowed to work in the white areas, but at night they had to go to their townships, they all had to disappear, except for the living servants.
Because the coloureds were the Indian...
No, the coloureds were bigger people of mixed race. There are quite a surprisingly large number, because when the first Europeans settled in South Africa, there were not that many white women.
Yeah.
So in the natural course of events, there were plenty of people of mixed race.
Okay.
But of course, once the National Party government took power, then any sort of sexual contact between the races was absolutely...
So how did they make that? Was it if you had any ancestor that was not 100% white, then they were... Coloured?
They had a problem with that, because it's actually very difficult to deal with people. Mm. So basically they went by appearance. Okay. If you looked white and you mixed with white people, then you were white.
Yeah.
This had problems when two people who were accepted as white had a child who clearly wasn't.
Yes.
It caused no end of grief. It didn't happen that often, but it caused a lot of problems, because the government just didn't know what to do, you know. They didn't have a proper mechanism for dealing with this, so it caused a great deal of grief. But
did you notice then a big distinction or divide between the English South Africans and the Dutch or the Boer South Africans?
Yes, there was.
They were separate communities, or...?
Pretty much so. In Johannesburg, where I grew up, was basically an English-speaking city. It was a big city, and of course there were Afrikaners there, but... Mm. It was, we didn't mingle with Afrikaans-speaking people, not because we didn't want to, but just because it didn't happen. And although everyone had to learn both languages, you know, I had to learn English and Afrikaans all through school, but they were still quite separate societies. Yeah.
Were they more the farmers, and the English were the city professionals?
To a large
people?
Extent, certainly the farming community was largely Afrikaans, and the business community was largely English, English-speaking anyway.
Okay. So you didn't feel that you'd left a lot behind, or thinking back now, do you think that your childhood had a big impact on you?
Well, it must have done, I suppose, but I was lucky, really, because I went to university, as I said, when it was still open to all races.
Yeah,
and so at an age where I was still very impressionable at university, I had the chance to mix with people of all races on an equal basis, which you didn't get elsewhere in South Africa.
And there wasn't a tension then with that? Or?
I never felt there was any problem, not within the university anyway.
So the African students would have been from privileged African backgrounds then?
I suppose they would have been. There were not very many African students. Most of the non-white students... Now, you've got to be... In South Africa, there was a very complicated... Yeah. Non-white meant not of Europeans.
I thought coloured was Indian and African.
There were Indians and there were Africans and there were coloureds.
So all the different sub... And then within the whites, there's the English and the
Poor. It was very complicated.
Yeah.
But in most of the non-white students that I encountered were probably a minority were Indian. Mm. And there were a few Chinese. I remember there was one black chap I got quite friendly with called Rose Parsley, but there weren't very many black students.
Yeah, and you never came across that sort of diversity at school age?
Oh, no, the schools were very much... You went to a white school. You didn't... Certainly, there was no question of this mixing races at school.
So you'd see some adult servants from other races, and, yeah, and that's
that
it?
That was about it, yeah.
So you almost felt you were growing up in a white community?
Well, you essentially were,
yeah.
Because the what went on in the African townships was very little publicised,
yeah,
by the white newspapers. So, yes, it was very much separate countries, for better or for worse. You know, you lived. Yeah. I lived with an English-speaking community, and I mixed with English-speaking people, and they were all white.
Yeah. Now we had as an undergraduate, there was one in England. There was one student who, the story at least, was that he'd had to leave South Africa because he was too left-wing. And the view of him, granted I was at a very politically active university, but he was considered to be extreme right-wing. by that, did you have you noticed that a distinction in the, what might have seen? You thought we're liberal, we don't like apartheid and so on in South Africa. You come to New Zealand and people saw things the same way, or they were more open, a few other steps along, or what?
Well, that's an interesting story to tell, because I knew people in South Africa who were left-wing, and I think they would have been considered left-wing in any society. In fact, the mathematics department where I worked, it had a few brushes with the law. In fact, one of my colleagues spent a bit of time in jail at the government's expense because of her anti-apartheid activities. And there was a notorious episode where someone planted a bomb in the Johannesburg railway station.
Uh-huh.
And I discovered subsequently that the dynamite for the bomb had been stored in the office next to mine. Unaware of it at the time. Yeah. So several of my colleagues were very active politically, on the left, that is.
Okay.
In fact, one of my friends and colleagues in maths, he wanted to marry a black woman. Well, you couldn't do that in South Africa. So he went to what was then Rhodesia.
Yeah.
And he was tracked down and kidnapped in the most lurid episode by the South African special police and brought back to South Africa. And this, somehow the press has got hold of this, and it was an absolute scandal. And eventually
he went there to live, because he could. In Israel, with the influence of the Orthodox parties, if they wanted to marry and it wasn't a certain level of Jewish marriage, they had to go to Cyprus to get married. But they could then go back to Israel as a married couple.
Oh, no, he would have had to. If he married this, I think he did marry this girl, probably her name was. Yeah, you would have had. You couldn't live with it. You couldn't have two people of different races living together in South Africa. No. It just wasn't on.
Okay, yeah.
It was illegal.
Okay.
Anyway, eventually they had to let him go and let him go back to Rhodesia. Yeah. I think he ended up in Canada with his wife.
There were
hectic times.
Yeah. You mentioned also about crime and security bars on the windows and so on. What, there was a lot of crime even then, I believe. Yes. It's got worse now, has it?
Worse. There was a lot of crime. You couldn't. Most of the petty crime was committed by black people. I'm sure there were plenty of swindlers and embezzlers and so on in the white side, but petty thefts and that sort of thing were very common.
So car hijackings and things?
All kinds of things of that sort were common. And so you had to have, everyone had burglar proofing on their windows, and the walls around the houses gradually got higher and got more razor wire on top and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So it was quite refreshing to come here.
So young children couldn't just go out and play in the street?
We did. Yeah. I mean, children will be children.
Yeah.
But I remember coming here the first year we were here, it was Christmas holidays, and there was a notice in the paper from the police saying, it's a good idea to lock your front door when you go away on holiday. And we thought, how refreshing. I noticed a big difference in the crime and the fact that houses were open. You know, quite common to have no fence, or just be open to the street and so on.
Yes,
I was used to high walls and so on.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So were there gated communities?
At the time, I don't know. Subsequently, there was my mother's parents lived in a retirement village in Johannesburg, which was gated. There was a guard at the gate and so on. At the time, though, I don't think so. I don't think the idea had really come in. But
Now, retire village, I thought that's a fairly new concept, or at least it is here, and so I don't recall
I
any
so.
In Britain
I think
when
so.
I was
I don't
young.
Think, I don't remember anything of the kind in South Africa either.
Yeah, okay.
Because, of course, the black people were all bused back to their townships at night.
Yes, yeah.
And anyone, a black person roaming the streets at night would almost certainly be arrested, you know, just because he wasn't supposed to be there, or she, but usually a he.
So you came to New Zealand, you were starting a new life, you felt your decision was you'll start a new life in New Zealand, you've got a two-month-old baby, you want the son, daughter?
Daughter.
You want them to have a chance to grow up in a different society?
Oh, yes, very much so.
Yeah,
so.
Okay. And... So, and it turned out as you expected, I suppose you were fairly
optimistic. It's not a move we've ever regretted. And I think on the whole it was pretty much what we thought. I mean, Palmerston North, particularly in those days, was a fairly small city and you didn't have all the... I mean, nowadays you walk through the centre of Palmerston North and you've got ethnic restaurants every second shop, you know.
Yes.
But when we first arrived, I think there were about three restaurants, and they all served the same food.
I noticed that too. Yeah, I was used to a lot of diversity before I came here, and there was a Chinese restaurant on or near the square upstairs. It was, and so going there, you could order a Chinese dish, but you get sort of, I think I ordered a noodle dish, and there's something like two spoonfuls of noodles and a whole load of mashed potato and steamed cauliflower. And the people in the next table were saying, isn't this good? What big portions we get. But it's diversified so much in the past 40, 45 years, which is... been interesting seeing New Zealanders adapt to that. But did you feel then, if it was very sort of narrow and parochial, did you feel that, or you come from a similar sort of society in South Africa?
Well, we noticed that Palmerston North was a lot smaller, but sort of it had everything we wanted. I joined the music society, and it had cinemas and all. It had all the amenities that you would expect in a big city. In fact, in many ways, Johannesburg, in many ways, was a cultural desert. It was sternly dedicated to making money.
Yeah.
And so there was a little Africana museum and there was a little art gallery, but there was nothing much else, really. And, you know, everyone in Johannesburg, all the white people anyway, were busy making as much money as they could, as fast as they could. It was not a culturally vibrant city, put it that way.
I felt Palmerston North was, because when I came it had about 60,000 people, but the sort of cultural facilities and general things that it had were what you might expect in a much larger place in Britain. But that's probably because if you're in a smaller place, there'd be a large place nearby, and here there's bigger distances.
And also having the university made a difference.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. Okay, so what about things like food? Was that a shock to you, or the same sort of?
Well, some of the dishes that were favoured by the Afrikaners were not available here. Hmm. The only thing I really regret, and you can buy it now, was boerewors was one thing, farmer's sausage, which was really nice, spicy sausage. Which I think you can buy in the shop.
Oh, is that sort of Dutch or German style?
Well, it was Dutch.
Dutch. Yeah.
And the other thing I really missed was biltong, which is basically...
That's the dried beef strips,
It shouldn't be beef. It should be dried buck biltong. And dried buck biltong is gorgeous stuff.
Buck biltong. So
made from springbuck core.
From springbuck. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
But that... My wife tried to make beef biltong when she started out here. So she acquired some beef and cut it up into strips and soused it in saltpeter and whatever you do. Mm. But the problem was that the sun here was not strong enough. I mean, in South Africa, you'd put it out in the sun and it would cook, it would dry.
The temperature of it was because they do say this, the sun's rays are stronger here than in England, at least, but it's not the same temperature.
Though. That's right. So it was quite a problem in the end. She had to hang this biltong in the hot water cupboard. The neighbours were a bit amazed to see these strips of meat on the washing line. But we gave up in the end. But I doubt if you can buy buck biltong even now. I think it's still beef biltong, but beef biltong is not the same. It doesn't have the chewability that buck biltong has. So I miss biltong. I still do.
Chewability? You mean it's more rubbery? You mean
it's more like
breaks up easier.
It's hard to describe, but really good biltong was like almost like wood in the way it broke off into little bits that you could chew. It wasn't rubbery, quite the reverse. It was much more brittle. You'd have to try it to know what I mean. But
okay, so you'd eat it as a snack, or
yes,
what?
Yes.
So, given that we don't have that here, what would you eat? You'd eat that in South Africa, whereas here you might be eating potato chips, or
possibly. But you also, I mean, like we went on a motor trip around Southwest Africa, and the food we carried with us was biltong and rusk, dried meat. And at lunchtime we'd bring out the biltong and munch away happily.
So was the South African diet sort of very high proportion meat and not so much vegetables, or?
Probably a bit higher than here, but it was basically the same. I mean, you know, the basic diet was the same.
Yeah.
I think partly, I suppose, because we were English.
Yeah, strong English tradition.
And still used to eat English food, basically.
Yeah.
This is part one of two. Listen next week for part two.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.